I immediately regret this decision.
Hey, we're recording the podcast. Shut up.
Good morning to you, wherever you are, because it is Morning Somewhere for April 19th, 2024. My name is Bernie Burns. With me, sitting right over there, so happy that it's Friday. Say hello to Ashley, everybody.
Friday.
Do you remember, that's just for you on Friday, Ashley.
I appreciate that.
Do you remember when the Rebecca Black song Friday came out?
I do.
Where were you? Instantly. Remember where you were?
Oh, no. Like, where was I in that moment? No, but I remember it just becoming like an instant meme. And it's interesting too, because as much as people made fun of it, we know that song.
I said at the time, I enjoyed the song. It's a good song. And I love the video. We actually had like some interaction with one of the people in the video, like the girl with the awkward dance in the back of the car, you know, one of the friends. But I wonder if anyone under the age of 20 even knows what we're talking about. I don't know if anybody under the age of 20 listens to this podcast, but she was Rebecca Black was a momentary pop star who, from what I understand, her parents like bought her recording session and she made this song and it went completely viral because, quote unquote, it was terrible. And everybody was listening to it ironically.
And we couldn't get it out of our heads.
And it made it a huge hit.
Which made it, so ironic or not, a huge success. I think she's actually released some albums since then as well. And people are like, oh, good job.
It's basically like the Willy Wonka thing, but to music, you know?
Sure.
Music, in quotes. Hey, everybody, it's Friday. On Friday, Ashley and I like to follow up on some things for the week, some things that have developed, some things we might have gotten wrong. I think we already covered most of that with the Dubai thing. And then just some things we wanted to expand upon further as well. So, Ash, hit it. What do you got for Friday today?
All right. So, let's go back to the start of the week, all the way back to our Sonic discussion.
Oh, boy. All right.
So, earlier this week, we were talking about Sonic because Keanu Reeves got cast in the next Sonic movie.
Plus,
Jim Carrey's presumably also cast in the Sonic 4 movie.
I have a new thing every time you say something for the next follow up Friday. I have a new sound for that now.
Great. Oh,
that's losing our rings.
We were discussing specifically the names of Sonic characters, and we received a correction that some of them do in fact have superhero names. For example, Tails' real name is, you ready for this?
So Tails is his superhero name.
Tails is his superhero name.
I don't know.
It's like his nickname.
I don't know, babe. I think this is a big platform. I'm not comfortable doxing. Sure. What's Tails' name?
Miles Prower.
His name is Miles?
Miles Prower.
Oh. Creative.
Well, he's not the only one with a superhero name. According to, Sonic lore is apparently very fractured. Because there were some, like, believe it or not, like Archie comics that like got a hold of some Sonic characters and did wild shit with them. But
the original tomes were lost. They'll be found in a crypt one day.
So the canon is a bit messy. But Sonic has a real name as well. Are you ready to hear it?
It's not Pete. What is it?
It's not Speedy Pete. It's Ogilvy Maurice.
Ogilvy Maurice? So Maurice is his last name?
I think his is middle name. I think it's Ogilvy Maurice Hedgehog.
So on the nose.
Depending on the canon that you're...
Ogilvy.
But that's my big update. I wanted to make sure that we show the proper respect to the names.
Wait, what about Amy?
Well, people have also said that Amy's name does mean something. It means like beloved or something because she's desperately in love with Sonic. So I have great news, Bernie. She does have an evocative name. It just boils her entirely down to her relationship with Sonic. Which
Bechdel test gets failed right out of the gate.
So much better.
As soon as when you say her name. there's a game that Finn and I have been playing lately called Planet Crafter because he's grounded from Minecraft. So we just immediately replaced it with a game very similar to Minecraft. It's a great game. We enjoyed it because he's learned a ton about it. It's a terraforming game.
It seems like a Subnautica-ish, but then it's
100%. The Subnautica vibes are all the way through this thing. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah. But it's like Subnautica, I don't really know what you would learn, you know, from Subnautica. Like, you get water from fish in Subnautica.
Stay away from the Leviathans?
Yeah, and this you're, like, trying to, like, get to clean water. You're trying to get to blue sky, green grass, growing plankton, growing plants, then frogs, fish, you know, stuff like that. So he's learned a lot. Like, he learned about chlorophyll. Like, now he knows, at 4 years old, he knows that plants make oxygen and green plants, you know, take carbon dioxide and turn it into oxygen, which we can breathe.
We've been having discussions as well about the importance of pollinators, like butterflies and bees and things, because they pollinate the flowers, and then they get, you get better vegetables and food from that, and they help things grow. And so it is a nice, fun way for him to learn about sort of how the world works using, you know, exceptionally simplified systems.
It's a good game.
They're fun and gamified.
Is there any crowdsourced rating that is more important than Steam ratings? Like, if I see a game is overwhelmingly positive on Steam, I'm like, well, I have to play this game. Like, I will literally buy it even if I don't know what the game is. I'll buy it if it has like 1,000 overwhelmingly positive reviews.
Yeah, it's like, if this is 96% overwhelmingly positive, I'm going to take a second look at that. The exception,
like, I wouldn't do that on Amazon. Like, if I see a 5-star exhaust manifold for a car I don't own, I'm not going to buy it. You know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. But it does. It's like, this is a $9 game on Steam that like 10,000 people have said is overwhelmingly positive. Yeah, I'll do that. Absolutely.
There's something about Steam's in particular as well that just, I don't know, it that impulse shopper in me, that I don't just go on the like Xbox store and just start buying games. I do that on Steam. I don't know what they figured out, but they figured something out. And it's not just the sales. The sales, remember, they used to have like flash sales and all this kind of crazy stuff. And now it's just like, it's on sale. That said, I don't pay attention to a lot of Steam ratings when they're too negative, because I've seen so many games get Steam like bombed.
Yeah.
And I know Steam's actually done a lot to fix that. They've now got their like, you know, this is what its recent rating versus its all-time rating. And so you can see if over time the rating has gone up.
Yeah, current reviews.
And you can go in and you can also see essentially like spikes in types of ratings. So you can see if there's a spike in negative reviews at like one period of time that was 2 years ago, and be like, okay, well, that's clearly not the case now.
Yeah, and just in case anybody doesn't know what the hell we're talking about, Steam is the marketplace for PC video games. There's lots of different ones, but everyone pretty much uses Steam. It's like the monopoly that nobody cares about for some reason. I'm not really sure why that is. And one of my most viral tweets of all time was talking about this, like one of the summer sales or something like that, where they marked down things incredibly, and like some game was like $2, and I went and saw it there, and I go, oh my God, that game is $2. I've always wanted to play that game. And I go to buy it, and it goes, this game is already in your library. You own it. Do you want to play it? And I go, nah.
But you know what? You already supported the developers, so good for you.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I was looking at my Steam library recently, and I'm going to take a screenshot of this, and I'll put it in the link dump, because it's very appropriate to me and you. I showed you this photo, and you knew exactly what it meant. But it's about Subnautica. It's specifically about when I last played Subnautica.
Oh, right.
Which is like 2 days before I had Finn.
Like, you were playing that game the whole trimester.
Yeah, that whole summer I was just locked in on Subnautica. It was so good. I was binging it. Had a kid, never touched it again.
It's like that meme of like the guy who plays with his friend on Xbox, like last logged in 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Your buddy, like, see you tomorrow. Yeah. Last logged in 8 years ago.
And it's like, I know, I just need to go there. I need to find one last location in Subnautica, like the one last place. And then I think I finished the game. And I'm like, I should do that. You want to do that?
Nah. I watch a YouTube video to show me how to do it.
Not right now. Later.
But while we're talking about lots of different stuff in here, Fallout, going back to the Fallout series, it has now had an overwhelming reception on Amazon Prime. Number one streaming series to debut in the last week. I have some numbers here, but basically everybody loves the Fallout series, and we would definitely be in that camp as well.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. And I'm really glad that it's got such a strong reception. Number one on the streaming top 10. So I think that's not just, it's not just at Prime's top 10, which would probably be easy to dominate as it's like the one big release on Prime right now, but just across streaming in general. So fantastic to see it received so well, because it means that hopefully other projects will take note. Also officially renewed for season 2. Not surprising, but really good to see.
And Witcher, if you're into that series, another video game based series, which also very good, They're going through a big change because they're moving from Henry Cavill as Geralt of Rivia.
Geralt of Rivia.
They're doing a mashup with Princess Bride. It's going to be amazing. It's amazing. And he's being replaced by Hemsworth.
The younger Hemsworth, Liam.
Liam Hemsworth. And but they have renewed it through season five while they're in production on season four. So that's a good sign.
That is a vote of confidence for sure. I'll be interested to see what they do with the other seasons.
Yeah.
I'm gonna check it out. I'm skeptical of it because I don't know how they do it with changing their lead actor. But that is a vote of confidence from Netflix, and I am curious to see how they manage the actor switch. That said, I fell off the last season. We were discussing this earlier. We don't think we've finished it, but we can't say for sure. And I don't know that that's a good sign.
You know, Last of Us gets a lot of credit for being faithful, the first faithful video game adaptation. I thought Witcher was really good up until it wasn't.
Right. And Witcher also straddles a sort of weird territory in that it's kind of a video game adaptation. It's also kind of a book adaptation.
Yeah, the video game itself was an adaptation. Yeah.
Right. And so it takes a lot of things from the video game, but I think technically they're adapting the books for the show, sort of, when they're not just doing their own thing. I like a lot of the characters in the show from a visual standpoint, like what they've done with characters. Ciri in particular, I think she looks fantastic. So curious to see sort of where they go with her and if they lean more into her being the lead as they did with the games. Is like, really, she's the main character and Geralt is the point of view character, almost like Holmes and Sherlock.
Yeah. And lots of nudity.
Well, that always helps.
That always helps. Yeah, but, and you know, there are people out there would probably have opinions about it being faithful too, because there was a lot of like usual like discussion around casting and things like that, as there tends to be. But overall, I think people were really pleased with the Witcher series, to the point where when Henry Cavill left, he left because they wanted to stray away from the source material. And that was a huge deal. So we'll see where season four goes. You know, it'll be interesting.
And five.
Yeah. While you're talking about, you know, Fallout being the number one series across all streaming platforms, it's really interesting how that's measured. And some different streaming platforms now are starting to say they're not going to put their numbers out there anymore.
Yeah, there were two odd back-to-back headlines from Netflix. One was like, Netflix adds 9.3 million subscribers. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. That's really great. Blows estimates out of the water. The next one was, Netflix will stop reporting subscribers.
I don't blame them, do you?
I don't, because especially if you're like the big dog in the game, like Netflix is, you're going to run out of people to add.
I had the exact same thought.
Right?
Because I was thinking, like, at what point did Microsoft saying, hey, we have so many new Windows users. It's like, it's established at this point. The land rush is over for the video streaming service, right? That whole land grab at the beginning, we're now past that phase. So it's not like, who's left to sign up? It's like we were talking about with JD yesterday with X. Who's signing up for X at this point as a new user? It's really just people getting old enough now to sign up for these services, right?
Yeah, it's all bots, apparently. I saw an interesting article from Tails, Miles Prower. it's a bad bot report by Tails. They're a cybersecurity leader saying
that, oh, this is a company named Tails.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. sorry.
Maybe. Well, I've always used their competitor, Amy.
just saying that nearly half of global internet traffic in 2024 has been generated by bots.
So we had talked about this a lot more so during like our test shows for Morning Somewhere. Like we're talking about like coming AI and things like that. And I get kind of a reputation for being a doom and gloom guy. But one of the things we would talk about was one day you'll just wake up and the internet won't work anymore. Like you won't trust the internet anymore, you know?
And already there, buddy.
There's a thing, you should go out and look at this. There's a way you can go out and you can back up Wikipedia, and it takes about 800 megabytes to back up all of Wikipedia.
Can I store it in my Neuralink?
You can put it on your encrypted drive to send to outer space to save Earth. Speaking of which, Project Hail Mary has a release date.
Hey, look at us. We're weaving in and out of the follow-ups on this particular follow-up Friday. But yeah, they announced that the Project Hail Mary movie, which is coming from Ryan Gosling, Phil Lord, Chris Miller, Amy Pascal, is coming.
Did you see who's writing it? We just talked about this guy.
Who?
The screenwriter for The Martian.
Oh, that's right.
Who then is directing some series that we were wondering why he was directing it. He's a Matrix. He's directed Matrix.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's Drew Goddard.
Yes. Okay, yes. So he is the person who adapted Andy Weir's Martian for the screen, now adapting Andy Weir's Project Hail Mary for the screen, and he's going to be directing the next Matrix movie if that happens, which hopefully it will, because now I'm really interested to see what that would be like.
See where he takes it.
Yeah, but I'm really excited about Project Hail Mary. I think anyone who read the book is also excited about it, and they're making all these announcements, but there's a character in this book. Really, there's two characters, but I think there's a lot of people who are waiting to hear, and I'm one of them, what the casting announcements for these parts are going to be. But it should be interesting. Yeah, in other media news for movies, Quentin Tarantino dropped a bit of a bombshell this week. This is according to Deadline. Tarantino has now said that The Movie Critic will not be his 10th and final film, meaning he's not making the movie. And I was really shocked to see this. And then I was also shocked to see he had done this before. The movie that he made, The Hateful Eight, at one point he put the script out there to six actors. And after the six actors got the script, somebody leaked it to Hollywood at large. And then agents started calling, pitching their clients to be in the movie. And then, understandably, Tarantino got very upset about that, that now his script was out there to everyone in Hollywood.
Sure.
And he said, I'm not making this movie. And he punted The Hateful Eight, and he made another movie before it. And I didn't know that it happened. That was like in 2014 that this happened. And somehow I missed that entirely.
You know, there's an interesting thing with Tarantino in particular, that he, a long time ago, said he was going to do this thing where he was like, I'm making 10 movies and that's it. And then he kind of like got a little bit of wiggle room by saying that Kill Bill Part 1, Part 2, which were released as two movies, were intended as a single project. So he still has one to go.
He wrote them as a single one and he directed it as a single one.
So he thinks of them as a single project. And so there's like, you know, sort of gets a bonus movie. This was going to be The Movie Critic. And he's dropped that. I feel like young Tarantino is not doing current Tarantino really any favors in that. I think he said something like there's like 10 good movies in a director. And after that, you know, no good. And he doesn't want to be like the old director putting out, you know, subpar stuff. If this is his final film, he's putting almost like too much pressure on himself. That it's like, it's okay to do 11 movies. You know what? You can do 12. How much sadder would the movie industry be if Spielberg had stopped at 10? So I'll be curious to know what Tarantino is doing instead of The Movie Critic as his quote-unquote final movie. And I'm hoping that he pulls basically a Miyazaki if he's going to retire, that he just keeps unretiring, being like, got another idea, going to make it.
Oh, people who unretire are losers. All right, I will link this Deadline article in the link dump, but it's because it's a lot to read here. But this is the thing about The Hateful Eight being punted and the whole story of Tarantino giving out the drafts. He did a lot of interviews about it, but somehow I missed it. It's a lot to talk about on this podcast, so we'll just link in the link dump if you're interested in that kind of a thing.
Yeah, we got a lot of following up to do this Friday.
What else do we got for follow-up today, babe?
Let's see. We were talking about earlier this week, we made reference to the video that came out after, I think it was Texas, passed the no drinking while driving law. And they were interviewing people being like, yeah, they were upset about everything back to having to wear seatbelts. And then you had a video that you sent me. I think it's an older video, and it's gone around a bit, but we're going to put this in the link dump because it's showing sort of the modernizations, like the new rules and regulations that have come around for cars, from seatbelts to like, what do they call them? Crumple zones.
Yeah. And so this was inspired by one of our users on the subreddit, Master Bastard Blaster. His real name is Ogilvy. But he posted a video, or they posted a video, excuse me, of the BBC doing interviews with UK drivers when they put in compulsory seatbelts. You have to wear a seatbelt while driving. And the difference between the people reacting to the reporters in the UK polite society versus the people in the American video that we showed was great. But the wild thing about this video, which we'll also link in the link dump, is like there's people not wearing seatbelts, but then they're also in cars that don't even have headrests on the seats. So your head's just over the seat. If you got hit from behind, you would just snap your neck instantly. You know, it's just like it's crazy how cars are. And then I went and found this video where they basically collided a 1959 Chevy Bel Air with a 2009 Chevy Malibu, like a little economy car. And, you know, the 1959 car is what is famously referred to as one of the old tanks, you know, this giant steel monstrosity. And you think it would just plow through the economy car. It's the exact opposite. Like, whatever goes on in the cockpit of that Bel Air is just, it makes you cringe. Like, watching the steering column, like, go straight through the crash test dummy.
Awful. They've got a camera, like, behind the driver. And so you can see basically the entire car come into the driver.
Right.
And a human would just be red paste at that point.
Yeah. It's like they're part of the engine block at that point. And it was, you know, we were talking too about some other things. And I made the point that sometimes the changes we make in order to have progress are really tough when you're doing them. I'm taking this objectively too. There were people who had lots of strong opinions about a smoking ban. But when you look back through that lens of progress, you can really see how, like, we needed to make some of these changes. Like, they had to happen.
Yeah. The existence of resistance is not in itself necessarily an argument against doing the thing.
And Well, no, at the same time, it doesn't justify every change and every law that gets made or every restriction. It doesn't justify it either. But sometimes you can look back and go, yeah, this is definitely progress. This is definitely progress.
Yeah, but it's a video that's, like, really interesting to watch and also kind of hard to watch.
So if you want to watch that video, it's on morningsomewhere.com.
Yeah, we put all these links in the link dump on our website, morningsomewhere.com.
Morningsomewhere.com. And if you want to support our Patreon, that's at patreon.com/morningsomewhere. There'll be a link on the website for that as well.
Speaking of which, I would like to thank today's sponsors, our good friend, Dan Fetinishin.
Back again.
Back
Look
again.
Who's back.
Back again.
Third it time's a charm with
Fetinishin.
Dan.
And Stephen Palmer Jones as well. So thank you to both of you for keeping this podcast ad-free for all of our listeners. But before we go, you had some things to say about Atlas.
Oh, just that we were talking about Atlas. Boston Dynamics retired their bipedal robot and then immediately put out a new version of it that is like an incredible step forward, like one of those step limit functions of like, we got to the end. Here's the retiring of this big clunky like robot that people push around with hockey sticks. And then they show the new version of Atlas in an introductory video laying on the floor. All it does is get up. That's all it does.
That's
and then
the
walk away.
Of the video? It's world-changing.
It's incredible. It's one of those things, when I talked about the range of emotions you have watching technology, you will go through that watching what is probably a 20-second video of watching a robot get up from the floor, turn towards the camera, and walk away. Everything you think about what a human and how a human moves, all those things I just described, throw it out. It's almost like these engineers who designed it, like, had to study how a humanoid object or person moves. And then they literally said, we're going to design it to look like that, and it's not going to move like a human in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, like, how would it be more convenient for us to move?
Right.
We can't do that, but if we could,
like, even something
how would we
as simple
like
as,
to be able to move?
Like, imagine turning around in a small space. It's like, this thing can do that way better than a human.
Yeah.
Way better than a human.
So.
Want to walk backwards? No problem. Yeah, it doesn't seem to have a front or a back.
So we're all screwed.
Or no, let's be optimistic and think they're going to do our jobs for them. Like those pesky stunt people jobs. We don't have to do those now. We don't have to worry about it.
That robot, the stunt robot that we talked about, by the way, is currently Spider-Man at Disney World.
I thought they had it at a park. I did remembered at some point they had a...
Yeah, they do some stunt show and it does basically a big Spider-Man stunt that would not be practical for a human to do.
Right. Because it'd be too dangerous in that environment.
Yes, apparently the robot frequently misses the landing.
I was about to say, but it's not dangerous to throw like a 2-ton robot through the air.
Yeah. No, you know, he'll just roll around and get back up and turn around and look at you and go, that could have gone better.
All right, well, that does it for us this week, ending April 19th, 2024. We will be back to talk to you on Monday. We hope you'll be here as well.
Bye, everybody.